Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting extravaganza of an episode. Almost as much of an extravaganza as Tony Danza. Not quite that much, though. I do pride myself on helping people get through the day easier by injecting terrible jokes at some point. And the reason for this is because when you wake up to whatever truth is actually out there, a lot of people, particularly religious people, think there's only one truth. I believe personally that that one truth is that there are many truths. and everybody seems to claim that they've got the answer on everything. And of course, you don't have the answers on everything, which is why your cell phone goes right off in the middle of a freaking show. It's unbelievable, you know. And I would like to, shall we say, prostrate myself, or at least this is how I live my life anyway, towards the activists and the people who do what I consider the real work of the quote-unquote truth movement, reading documents, exposing scumbaggery, these kinds of things. Because when you're doing that, if you notice how everybody's got a certain skill, and for some people their skill is not doing the research, their skill is actually promoting those who do the research, or at least giving them a platform to speak. And that's where I come in, generally speaking. And the whole idea behind it is that these people just need the time to tell their story. And if they're a disinfo agent or something like that, you just need to give them enough rope to hang himself with. That's it. It's not confrontational. It's meant to be fun to listen to. Because who wants to come to the end of a radio show and feel like you're going to kill something? Or feel like something's going to kill you? It's not the most pleasant of sensations. I don't think that there's too much call for any more of that. There's enough already. Kind of like professionalism. A lot of people accuse me of being unprofessional. And what I say back to them is, bro, you do realize the world's currently run by professionals. How's that working out for you? Doesn't matter what anybody claims to be an authority on. They're basically not getting it. Ultimately, at the end of the day, they're not getting that everybody's got the opportunity to contribute. I don't understand why that is. Is it because people have lost faith in themselves, principally, first of all, that you believe that, I've seen this so much around the message boards and things of that nature, about how we need everybody to do this, we need everybody to do that, and we need everybody to get into with this idea, or this gel, or this jam. Dude, you're in the wrong place, spiritually speaking. It's not about what we all do, it's about what you're doing. I don't like people telling me what to do. And even if they're trying to help me, I don't like them telling me to do something that's helpful for me, because it makes me resist it automatically. And I think what's happening here is there's this the split in ideological ground, shall we say, where this kind of socialist aspect comes out in people, and it even happens in your daily life. They just kind of like tell you how to run your life, just kind of like a parent does or whatever. There's nothing inherently wrong with it. And they're not, you know, malicious or terrible. There's plenty of nice socialists. However, every single system gets corrupted. And this is what a lot of people don't get yet. It doesn't matter who you got running the show, darling, because there's somebody else pulling the strings. That's how the game works. It would have fallen apart if it wasn't for that. Can you imagine how many payoffs, how many donations, political or otherwise? How many anythings can you possibly look at and think to yourself, there's absolutely no scumbaggery there. Nah, it's clean as a whistle. She's right. You can't. Not anymore. Now, I'm not sure if it's fortunate or unfortunate that you no longer have any choice of ignoring reality. Ignoring reality, I don't understand that mentality. Escaping reality momentarily because it's incredibly stressful, by chilling out and doing something that puts your nerves at ease so that you're not constantly tensed up like you're prepping for a fight, I got no problem with that whatsoever. You'll live longer and be able to fight longer, conceivably. And what is it? What is it that's actually at stake here? This is the realization I came to years and years ago. What's at stake? I'm going to get killed. All right, it's purely selfish self-preservation. That's my entire modus operandi and salvation at the end of the day. However, I do the direct opposite of what my instincts tell me to do. My instincts tell me to be selfish, spend all my time to myself, and do whatever the heck I want to do, and which is basically like be lazy and do nothing, and go out and help people, activists and things of that nature. Sat down the last couple of days and edited some protest footage together. I'm going to be editing the speakers of the protest. You know, like, people don't get it. Protests don't accomplish anything. Sure. In the main. I'm not saying they never have accomplished anything. But it's not the reason I go to a protest is whether it's going to accomplish something or not. I go to them and film them so that later on, after the protest is over, after everybody's heard these, say, 10 scheduled speakers from different political parties, different political persuasions, and different veins of research give their accounts to a crowd, that account is recorded and documented so that it can be referenced later afterwards, so that the learning potential does not start and end with the current crowd that is present. Not to mention, if it was put upon them, you'd have to make sure that they remember every single word. You do realize that's impossible, don't you? A camera remembers, and people can see it reiterated. Now, activists don't have, I'm not sure whether it's the presence of mind, I don't think that's an appropriate term, because it's certainly present in their mind. But sometimes it's simply an age thing, you know? I'm young, so technology is like second nature to me. It's like an extension of my body. And because they're like maybe 10, 20, 30 years older than me, the technology didn't come in until a number of decades after they'd already grown up and learned how to operate in the world. So picking up a camera or taking it home and editing for a few hours or something like that, to me, it's a piece of cake. But to them, it's incredibly difficult. So difficult, in fact, that they don't even bother or try. And I saw that happening. I saw these people, instead of spending their time self-promoting, etc., they're spending their time researching. They're trying to expose the worst kind of criminal scum that the country and the world has ever seen on their own time, on their own dime. And I felt bad about that, that they spent all that time and all that effort just to come up and relay some information that most people will just forget and will be lost, in some cases forever. These people are important. They are the fabric that binds our society together when everything else that we rely upon to hold it in place has failed us. Everything you've been brought up to believe about the government caring for people from cradle to grave, no. They snatch you from your cradle and then put you into a grave as soon as they freaking can. That's about it. As soon as you pass your use-by date. That's why the government hasn't outlawed smoking. Hey, do you know what happens to people when they get old? They don't work anymore. And the state gives them money. So if you keep people smoking when they get too old to work, they die, and the state doesn't have to give them any money. They consider it a good investment. That's the cold, calculating nature the moral flexibility of scumbaggery. This is the chief discipline at every single major theatre of influence. No, I'm not kidding. Scumbaggery is a profession. It is an absolute code. Organized crime has one rule that it holds above all its other rules. Keep a low profile. You know what low profile means? Let me tell you what it's not. It is not admitting what you do. It is not recording damaging conversations that you participate in. It is not exposing yourself to the light of day. It is not appearing extravagant. It is not being a celebrity in the headlines. It is not being a name that people know and recognize. All these people in the public face are pawns and puppets. There's an incredible post by one of the mana leaders. And what I love is how everything that happens in New Zealand seems to translate in some way, in a mirror image almost, to what's happening in America. For instance, Stephen Joyce is a member of the New Zealand Parliament, right? He's currently the government communications minister. Guess who he used to be CEO of? MediaWorks. Who are MediaWorks, you ask? They're the largest privately owned media company in the country. And then their CEO gets a job as the head of communications for the government. And then brokers a deal to give a bailout of $40 million. You gotta love that. To MediaWorks, who under his leadership couldn't make enough money to pay their $40 million worth of broadcast licensing fees to the government, which he now is. You can't make this stuff up. These people are incredibly corrupt. And that's not all. There's an entire network of these scumbaggery pieces of trash. They're all over the place. It's quite nasty. For example, Wayne Eagleson, who's the Prime Minister's Chief of Staff and designs and directs the media daily to endorse the National Party. He's basically the PR man that's working for him. And down below him, we have one of the big media talking heads that we've got in New Zealand who always says that people who believe in fluoride are nutters and is basically the most parasitical talk radio show host in the country, Sean Plunkett. And he's a bit of... He needs to change his name to Plonker, really. And he's also, incidentally, is employed by MediaWorks. And he's fanatical about supporting the government and disses anybody who doesn't toe the official line. And guess when he got employed? Directly after a giant MediaWorks bailout so they could pay him enough to come on air to push the government propaganda. And down below him, we've got Mike Hosking. Now, this dude is like, I don't know how you'd relate to him. He's not entirely like Bill O'Reilly, but he's close enough. He's kind of like a cross between if Bill O'Reilly and Rush Limbaugh had a really strangely professional-looking son together when they're having a late-night man session at Bohemian Grove. That's who their love child would look like. It would be Mike Hosking from New Zealand, who also does News Talk ZB. Now, News Talk ZB is the other privately owned radio station, and I believe it's actually still under the umbrella of MediaWorks. You see, you've got this political corruption and these chess pieces put on the board. All the people who tell you the way the government's thinking, the way the government does things, is a freaking suck-up to them. So they're not going to tell you the bad stuff. And in many cases, this means they don't tell you the truth. It means they can't tell you the truth. Because often, the bad stuff is all there is. And the only good things they can do are lies they have to make up. These people are dedicated to the craft and creed of scumbaggery. Deception is second nature. These people are so bad that the entire country has no idea who's running it. That is how tightly networked the media in New Zealand is, just looking at a case study. And I'm sure the American audience is going, you know, sounds exactly right. Sure, the Australian audience and UK and Canadians. In fact, any country in the world, provided you can currently speak English, would know how deep the corruption in the media to control our thoughts, to report misinformation, to keep us confused and angry at each other and make us fumble around in the dark looking for our enemies so that we never find them. This is the game that is being played. It is insidious. And many people will sit back and go, no, it couldn't possibly be that way. That is your first mistake. They use your own morality against you. Because they're so brazen, you never even click that somebody could possibly be that evil. Because you're not that evil. Oh, I could never do that. So therefore nobody else would. That is the logic. That is the lie we tell ourselves. We tell ourselves that if these people make a mistake, it's because they're stupid. It's not a mistake. Simply a slip-up. Slip of the tongue. Sometimes these people, you see them for what they really are. When they think nobody's watching. When they think nobody's looking. When they feel that it's safe to crawl out from under the rock. As it were. These are dangerous, manipulative, and generally quite influential, and often reasonably clean-cut, often even slightly attractive. They might even have feminine qualities. For example, we've got a reporter for TV3 Media Works down here, Tova O'Brien, and she's the chief political editor, rather the assistant to the chief political editor, Patrick Gower, who incidentally happens to be a dear friend, Tova O'Brien that is, to the Member of Parliament Judith Collins, who incidentally was a woman that was party to a number of very dodgy deals with farmland, where one of the chief beneficiaries for the seizure of farmland happened to be her husband. She passed laws back in the day to crush boy racers' cars, you know. If you're doing burnouts in the street or something like that, they will take your property and they will crush it and give you back the cube. This is how she got the nickname Crusher. I can't wait to see her in person.
Crusher, just a few questions.
Oh, Crusher, you kill me. You really do. And she's incidentally the Justice Minister who was chief architect of the prison's new plan to solve the prison housing crisis. That's right. Get container ship containers and fill them full of prisoners. Like they're frickin' boat people. These are nasty criminal scum. Judith Collins, also, I'm running on Judith Collins right now. I really don't like Crusher. There's certain people, you can just look at them, and after a few years in the field of scumbaggery research, you can't stand the sight of them, but you can't stop looking for some reason. And it drives you nuts. Anyway, she also passed a law, or helped to make it illegal to assault a police officer when he's off duty. So if an off-duty cop is drunk in a bar or something and comes and starts a fight with you and you haymaker him, you get done for assaulting a police officer. It makes them a second type of citizen, a protected species on and off the clock. At no point are they a regular person anymore. To me, the implication of that was quite profound and unruly. It's terrible. And running on down the list of this New Zealand list of government shells, I think they actually do fit the exact definition of the word shell. This word gets misused very, very often. I see it all the time. People get called shells for doing silly things or you know, just telling lies or whatever. It's not what a shill does. Ordinary people do that kind of stuff. A shill is somebody who doesn't say things that are controversial, who always takes the official line on things, and protects authority. Okay? Not in a roundabout way, but in a direct way. And I guess there might be some shills in the truth movement. I can think of several offhand, but predominantly when it comes to being a shill, in the shilling sense of the word, with the shill factor of 33, you can't look past the mainstream media. They got it locked down, son. What's the kind of archetype of a shill? Oh, a manipulative sociopathic scumbag. Do manipulative sociopathic scumbags like gravitating towards audiences that hate manipulative sociopathic scumbags and won't be paid for being hated? No? No, they don't. Not generally. Unless they're hired by the FBI. So instead, they migrate into mainstream media, where the manipulative shillery and their scumbaggery can be better utilised, and they'll get paid handsomely for it. And instead of caring about news stories and caring about the people who've suffered trauma that they're interviewing at the time of an earthquake saying stupid questions like, "How do you feel? Huh? Are you feeling somewhat traumatized after this enormous earthquake where you witnessed several people die? Huh? Are you?" Oh, I don't know what questions to ask because I'm a media person. I've got about as much journalistic credibility as the crack on Osama bin Laden's dead ass. There's nothing going on up there.
There's no upstairs for these people.
It's oh my god. The arrogance. That's the other thing. The smarminess. My fingers actually curl into claw-like shapes at the very mention of the smarminess of journalists. Oh, there it goes again. For instance, the face of a man named Brooke Sabin, who's incidentally also a TV3 reporter, he's the son of a National Party MP, Mike Sabin, and he assists with pro-National Party media strategy. Like, hey son, yes dad, would you mind running a puff piece for us in your news show tonight? Well, sure dad, no problem. There's one degree of separation with that scumbag. You're gonna be freaking kidding me. And on top of that, we've got Larry Williams, who's on News Talk ZB. Now, this is the other thing about MediaWorks. Not only are they the biggest private one, but they've also got a whole umbrella of little private functions underneath them as well. So, for example, there's three main talkback stations. There's Radio Live, News Talk ZB, and National Radio. Okay? And that's basically it. And MediaWorks controls two of them. Does that sound like they've got talk radio down? Considering National Radio hardly even takes callers, or they don't really do it at all, and it's kind of like dull and slow, and it's not full of advertisements and things of that nature, because it's a public broadcasting thing, you know? There's no competition for intellectually stimulating talk radio in this country. There's no options. Not in a great fanfare lineup of a 24-hour-a-day station run by professionals with gear and funding and sponsors and all of that kind of stuff. If you want that kind of stuff, you won't be able to sell truth to people. Okay? You can't do it. You can't sell mainstream stuff to people who want to hear the truth. It doesn't work like that. If you want to sell trash news, junk, manipulation, and distortion, you will get all the sponsors you want, because you'll be pushing every agenda that they need you to for their bottom line. I mean, think about it. Let's say, for example, MediaWorks wanted to do a story about banks ripping people off. Guess who a lot of their advertisers are? You guessed it, major banks. So would they run a really, really negative news story and then keep hammering it and keep criticizing the bankers for stealing everything? Or would they just say nothing unless they're absolutely forced to by the sheer overwhelming majority of people who want to cover this big fat story about how banks create money out of nothing, which the media have done? But that's about it. Just the once. Once in a while, we'll criticize the banks just to make everybody suspect that we might be on the level. They're not on the level. There are several hours that you need in order to explain banking to people in a degree that they might understand. You know, watching, God rest his souls, Aaron Russo's From Freedom to Fascism. How America became a slave to criminal bankers. It's absolutely nasty. Now, I think that when it comes down to this, when you're talking about media, I've kind of got a pretty big demarcation line. However, I can go out and say, I don't like all of these media people. Sure. But it doesn't mean that I'm going to be like rude to them in person if they turn up. Does it? Why would I be? I think that there's an important bridge to be made. But the problem is, when you're trying to build bridges with somebody who's a sociopath, it's a bridge to nowhere. It's a wasted investment. You know, this is the thing that's in the back of your mind. And in the other part of your mind, you're like, oh, I don't get invited to all the big glitzy glamours and gigs with all these other media douchebags who sit around drinking and satisfying their alcoholism while they dream up their next trip to Tahiti. It actually is really aggravating to not get any recognition. That's the thing that gets me. I've been doing for like 6, 7, 8 years what the media should have been doing for the last 100. And beat them at their own game. Got more subscribers than New Zealand Herald. The up till I came on the scene, the most subscribed YouTube news channel in the country. You know, by a long shot. And after only 3.5 years actually trying and going to protests and filming public meetings, I had more subscribers than they did. And I still do today by a huge margin. These people don't have the drive. They don't have the dedication that people like me do, who are afraid for their very lives. And in so doing, it motivates them to go out there and do things that scare them, because they know if they don't do these things that scare them, someday they're going to die. And it'll usually be the thing you don't stop that kills you. I mean, did I miss something? How many experiments have there been on humans that are like absolutely inhuman? Why is the entire public pseudo guinea pigs to the pharmaceutical industry, who don't do phase 3 testing until the entire public is exposed to these dangerous medications that cause homicide and suicide? You know what I heard that?
Not on mainstream frickin' media, I didn't!
These people have got the Colosseum wrapped in a nice duvet.
And it's so comfy and so warm. And it's so nice. Oh, there's no such thing as sociopathic criminal scumbags. You know? There's nobody at the helm. There's nobody in control. There's nobody with $100 trillion in their personal bank account that can bribe anybody or kill anybody on earth that they please at any old frickin' time of the day they want. There's nobody like that. No. Just live in a perpetual bubble of denial. Now, and actually, it's their job to destroy people like me. To defame the activists who I know personally and have helped many, many occasions.
And you know what really gets me? You know what really bugs me? Is they're sitting there on like 50,000 listeners a night and I can only get 10,000 in a month. And I have to rely on an international audience in order to make up those numbers. There's something very, very wrong here. The good information that people should be hearing from the horse's freaking mouth is not getting out there. Partly, it's because I don't have a budget. You know, donations are all that I live off. When there's $10 and $5 monthly donations coming in from people, almost every single month, it's down to the exact wire between that poverty and being able to live this week kind of moment. Okay? But every single time without fail, precisely when I need X amount of dollars for X expense, that exact amount turns up exactly at the same time that bill is due. Isn't that weird? And it's been happening concurrently for like the last 4 years-ish. And you find that strange? I consider that to be the universe's way of telling me, hey Vinny, keep up the good work. We're not going to let you die. You know? You're not going to go hungry tonight, you annoying bastard. What? When I'm thinking about that, and a lot of the times I get upset when activists that I know are criticised. You know, like it was just one dude today. He called Penny Bright, who's like one of the chief scumbaggery exposers in New Zealand history. As far as I'm concerned, and I must stake my reputation on that remark right there. And he says, Penny Bright's a retard. You know, and this righteous flame of indignation just flares up in me because I know who this person is. I know what they do. I know them very deeply and intimately. I have seen their home and what they live in. I am on the receiving end of their emails and requests and things that they're doing all the freaking time. I have seen how many politicians are afraid of this woman. And he calls her a retard. And that just irks me, you know, when in actual fact, he's the retard. And it's these empty, soulless, selfish people who do nothing for the good of society, of their own free will, that are the real problem here. And it comes down to it, some days, you don't know what you're fighting for. You really don't. Because it's just like in the Matrix, you know, some people just ain't ready to be unplugged. And if you're foolish, you'll keep trying to convince the people who aren't ready to be unplugged of the truth. You need more than the truth. You need much more than that. Because the truth can be put down with a lie. And if it starts to resurface, then they add another lie on top. Starts to pierce through the cracks, they just add another lie. You see, it's so much easier to come up with a lie than it is to come up with the truth. Because the truth of whatever it is, fluoride being good for you or bad for you or whatever, there's only one truth on that. It's a scientifically proven fact that it's a freaking noxious poison and will dumb you down. And these people push it on children. That kind of truth is not something that's easy to deal with, is it? You know, how angry do you get? I've been angry. I'm probably angry right now. There's nothing going on that's good when it comes to officialdom. It all seems to be bad to me. And maybe that's because I'm stuck in this bubble. I'm stuck in a bubble with people who expose scumbaggery for a living so that we see scumbaggery, breathe scumbaggery. We know it. It's part of us. And you got to go through life one step at a time, endlessly putting up with the crap that you see around you. That's the problem with it, isn't it? Is that it's never ending. And it just keeps getting worse. I can't believe people don't see it, is what everybody keeps telling me. I can't believe they don't see it. I can't believe it. Why can't you believe it, bro? Isn't it obvious? Hello, they have an enormous propaganda machine, more money than God. They control most of the institutions through financing them. Colgate-sponsored dental schools that incidentally promote fluoride. I mean, it's not that difficult to work out why everybody's dumbed down, why nobody knows the truth from fiction, and why everybody gets really hostile when you try to tell them something that they don't believe. It's because it was made that way. There's even a system to resist us. And that's the programming. That's that wonderful sense you get when this person is suddenly not appealing to reason and they're only insulting you and they're not revealing any facts or anything of any nature. That is the cognitive dissonance. Basically, if you pull a gun on somebody, that's the intellectual equivalent of cognitive dissonance. What happens to that person? They go into defense mode. Okay, instantly. Your life's in danger, and so you have to fight or flight. Okay, I've had many people get really, really angry with me, and then many other people just simply not say anything and walk away. Or not say anything and just hope that I go away. All right, that's the basic spectrum that you're dealing with people who aren't ready to accept the truth. And it's frustrating, I must admit, but it's necessary, I think. Why? Why is suffering and being frustrated with people's inadequacies necessary, you ask? Because it gives you a chance to look on things with a little bit of humility. You were once as ignorant. You were once as stupid. You were once as deceived, and you once didn't want to know the truth either. So stop treating everybody else like they're different from you. Unless they're a sociopathic criminal scumbag, of course. Because they are very different to you. And again, like I say, they'll use your morality against you. They use the best part of you against yourself. That's how evil it is. This is what we're up against. And it's not like people aren't waking up. I hear a lot of this all the time. Oh, everybody's waking up. Everybody's waking up. It's going to be great. And it's all going to be love and light and procedure. And there's no utopia, Jack Blood once told me. And I was never in a disagreement with him for a start. But now I'm really starting to agree with him. Because it seems that because we're inherently flawed as people, any system that we try to create would probably have inherent flaws in it as well. Don't you think? Has there ever been anything designed by man that has no flaws? Has a man designed something perfect? And the answer is probably no. But we all like to rationalize and say, oh, it's perfect in its own way. You're perfect in your own way. And I like what Tyler Durden said in Fight Club. I say, stop being perfect. I say, let's evolve. Chips fall where they may. And people are so afraid to let go of these things that they've brought around them in their lives that have given them comfort over the years. They don't want to try something new, because new is dangerous. New is a threat to the established order. And they don't want to upset the apple cart. Don't want to fall off the bandwagon. Don't want to stick out of a crowd. And now, the Diagnostic Statistical Manual, which catalogues all the made-up psychological conditions via a vote. I'm not kidding you. They say, what are all these symptoms of ADHD? Oh, this, that, and the other. Okay, do we all agree that's a disease? Yep. Have we got a blood test to prove it? No. Have we got any trials to prove it? Not really. We got any double-blind trials on those drugs that we're going to be pumping the kids full of to make sure that they're not dangerous? Nah. All right, it's in. Cha-ching! Thank you. You see, follow the money. People forget that. For goodness sake, follow the freaking money! Whoever's the richest is probably the most suspicious. Okay? If you're pulling in a couple of hundred K a year, and you don't seem to be doing anything, probably a drug dealer. You know? Simplest explanation. Comes right up to it. And guess who winds up earning hundreds of million dollars a year? Presidential candidates. Right? Well, guess what happened with Bill Clinton? Oh, yeah, that's right. As an Arkansas governor, he wound up importing cocaine into the state. He had a taste for the powder. And a taste for the ladies. Had a state trooper that drove him around as a chauffeur to go pick up women. Or go to hotels and stuff. Unbelievable corruption. These are the most moralist, degenerate, disgusting individuals that you could ever conceive of. And you know what the most frightening thing is? They just look like any one of us. It could be anybody. Anybody could be engaging in scumbaggery. And you can't tell by looking at them a lot of the time. In fact, a lot of the time, you'll look up to them and you'll think they're holier than thou, that they are flawless. And that's the illusion. That's what people, particularly in the media game, I feel are lacking. A sense of realness, approachability. One of my listeners invited me to a party that I didn't know anybody at. And we were going to play a song for him, our happy birthday song. And a couple of people happened to be listeners, and they protested with me alongside me and stuff, but I couldn't remember them. So you know what I did first off? Instead of like withdrawing and going, okay, I don't know who you are, I'm a media show host, what are you? I give them a big old hug. All right. To smooth that over and show them I'm on the level. Because I freaking am. There's no ego about it. If I don't remember you, it's not an insult. I just meet so many freaking people. I'm not God. I can't remember everything. But you're here now. So let's have a chance to have a chat so I can appreciate who you really are. And remember that instead. All right. For everything that you do, that you've got a failing in your life, I believe you need to compensate for. In some cases, overcompensate for. And we all do it. Don't we? Oh man, I'm really insecure about the size of my manhood. Well, why don't you get a really fast car, bro? You know, that's not a bad idea. I could do burnouts in it. And then he does burnouts in it and crushes his car. Oh, Crusher. You kill me. You really do. There's an element within the truth movement that despises the ordinary people who are currently unaware. Blames them, in fact, for our current state of affairs because they're going along with it. I don't know. I think there's three parts of blame. You know how they say it takes two to tango? Well, it takes three to frick up the whole world. For example, there's those who are aware of it, don't agree with it, and do nothing. There are those who actually do it and plan it, and of course don't plan on stopping. And there are those who are completely unaware and no freaking clue. And so they just go along with it. Now, once you're informed, then you've got a choice. Only then can you render judgment. So, bro, what are you doing to save the world from the criminal banking cartel that runs pretty much everything? Well, I'm doing a radio show. I created New Zealand's largest online archive of protests and public meetings freely available to all people around the world that the world has ever seen. More than any other institution or single person in New Zealand history. Oh, well, okay. Carry on. You know, you've got to earn your existence. That's what I feel anyway. You have to actually justify your existence. Why am I alive? Why am I needed? What is my purpose? How can I best benefit other people and not just spend all the time obsessing over the benefit to myself or what my profile is or what kind of public relations BS I need to sell myself with? Let's just be real. Okay? Is that too much to ask? After all everybody's been through? I mean, really? What have you gone through? 10, 15, some cases 20 years of schooling, including higher education and all the way down to kindergarten cop. You've had people abusing you, teasing you, assaulting you, people in authority not listening to you, being told to shut up the whole time, being made to read things that are boring and irrelevant, being told facts that you found out later were just lies. For all those years, and then you get into jobs, working for people you don't like, so you can earn some money to buy crap that you don't need, and nobody told you about it until later on. I mean, can't we just be real with each other now? We're past all that, right? For some people, it's not. For some people, they don't dive into the movement, you know, head first and cast their old self and their old ways behind. Very, very difficult to do. I'm probably a victim of that myself. You bring in a lot of your old habits. And this is what's really incredibly dangerous, because it's those old habits that led to the problems of the system that you're currently going along with in the first freaking place, isn't it? Who's caring? Who's putting in the effort? Who's making a stand when a stand needs to be made? If there is nobody else, and you are the person who's sitting there on your couch going, hey, I've got a great idea of how to solve that. And then you don't write it down or get off the couch and start putting it into action, your brain pulls the emergency brake. Within 5 seconds, any great idea you have would be lost forever. It's said that the average person comes up with like $3 million ideas a day. Every person. There's billions of people on the planet, for goodness sake. We could all be millionaires. But we don't. And we aren't. Why? Because we don't believe in ourselves enough. And also, the table is tilted inexorably in the direction of people who don't have to work for a living, who can literally make money up. Like it's a magic trick. Ta-da! There's $100 trillion. You can do that. Flick of a switch. Well, maybe I'm exaggerating, but you get the idea.
How long did it take you to make $100 billion on? Bit longer than it takes Congress? Who just give it to the bankers and just bail them right out? You bet your ass it does. And it'll take you your entire life to pay off your portion of that debt. And that's how they get you. Get us with dumbing us down, getting us in debt, and then distracting us with BS. All right. So we're too stupid to think. We're too preoccupied to even have time to think anyway, even if we weren't too stupid to do it. And we're too poor to finance anything that would make a difference when it comes to these things that we're thinking about all day long. You like me with the Terminator vision, you know? When you go outside, you know how the Terminator, like, he's got that little red screen and all that information just coming down on it? It's kind of like that, walking through a city street. And it's just outlining all these things, just effing me off. Women's magazines telling women they're too fat or too slim or focused on celebrities and nothing real. Music that has no messages plastered all over the windows of record stores that nobody goes to because everybody downloads the music for free online anyway. These kind of stupid things occur to me. Like the Wi-Fi towers that are everywhere. And the cell phones. I saw a great picture on Facebook today. It had a big warning sign on the side of the road that says, "Caution, children texting." You know? Have you ever had that? Some doofus? Or some kid? Not even looking where they're going when they're crossing the road. You know? I mean, what is the term for that? Tailgate bait? Bumper bait? Some form of bait, I'm sure. If people are just accidents waiting to happen. And this is what happens when you get dumbed down, isn't it? You lose your concentration. You stop valuing things that really matter. Like being alive, for instance. I mean, you know, out of all my priorities in life, making sure that I'm still alive is probably number one. Am I the only one who feels this way? I certainly hope I'm not. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on freedomslips.com. This is a listener-supported network, ladies and gentlemen, so please, if you will, go to freedomslips.com today and make a donation as soon as you can. And also, I'm a listener-supported activist, so if you want to go to thevinnieeastwoodshow.com and sign up for a couple of dollars a month, I'd really appreciate that too. Love ya. See you after the break. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the fastest 2 hours in talk radio, broadcasting live from the future, live from New Zealand, the little sunny island in the sun, where there's no such thing as corruption and no such thing as scam. And we have a caller on the line there. Caller, are you there?
Vinnie.
Yeah, welcome.
Oh, thanks, Vinnie. I'm Brian. I have a show called I Am Nature. It's new to the network.
Oh, well, welcome to the network then, son. What's up?
Oh, thank you. You're an all-pro. You've been on there a long time.
Well, not on Freedom Slips, I haven't. Maybe a couple of months or so, but yeah.
Well, that's all? Oh, okay. From listening to your show, it seemed like you've been doing some great activism for a long time. So,
well, 8 years, yeah. give or take. I think I started doing radio in 2010.
Oh, yeah. Awesome. Hey, what do you think about the election in Greece?
Don't know that much about it to tell you the truth. Last I heard of Greece, they had a real problem with an infected economy with all this debt, and so they elected a guy who used to run with the World Bank or something like that, called Papademos, which I thought was ironic because it sounds like a venereal disease.
Well, there's a new party called Syriza, and they want to take over the banking system, make it public. And I've got an article here. I haven't read the whole thing, but I think they also believe in direct democracy. It's a grassroots party. It's been forming over the last 4 years.
Well, that's
quite an
nice.
Amazing change.
Sure, they might get sabotaged or infiltrated or something like that, as happens with a lot of good parties, isn't it?
Well, you know, I was talking to a friend who's with Ubuntu here, and I'm in Canada, and he's a pretty prominent member in the group, and he told me about this. I said, holy cow, I had no idea that, you know, something this progressive had happened. Because, you know, you need a real shake-up, usually, to get people to start thinking, you know, for alternative approaches to governance. And I'm very impressed with this change. I'm not sure when this election even happened, but I think it's fairly recent.
Well, I think there's two waves to change. There's cleaning the board. I think you've got speakers on there or something, Brian. It's feeding back something chronic. So if you just turn your speakers down, that would be lovely. And professional sounding. And if you're calling in via a Skype phone as well, if you go to preferences and turn off your Skype notifications, that also works as well, so you don't have those little bloops that come out over talk radio.
Okay, no, I had you on speaker. Okay, I'll take it off.
Yeah, but the two elements I was saying here is kind of like the clean slate, and that's kind of like getting all the corrupt scumbags that are currently in the institutions out of them, and then there's the rebuild that comes directly after that, where you actually have to restructure organizations and the way that society's being run, at least in order to prevent corruption for a limited time frame. You can never prevent it forever. What's problematic is that every single institution that you set up has kind of like built-in trust in a certain thing because it's an institution, and that trust will be what's allowing people to, you know, be manipulated and have the truth distorted to them. And so when it comes to alternative forms of governance, what Michael Tellinger was talking about, the Ubuntu movement, I thought was quite an interesting response, because primarily the reason why communities function and function well is because there's some form of community network. And what he did is he forced, well, basically, if people wanted to become a part of the Ubuntu movement, they had to put in 3 hours a week of work. And as a result, they get to use any of the products that the community is building, you know, like the new community hall that they put up, etc. And I clicked right away that 3 hours a week is exactly the right amount of time that you need in order to know the other people in your community, okay? I was thinking this is the difference between living in rural areas and living in cities. Cities, people brush past you. You don't even say hi or anything. You mostly are looking down a lot of the time because there's too much possible interaction to go on to even really try and start to a large degree. You know, there's just too many people. You can't know everybody on your street. You can't hang out with everybody in a city of a million people, can you? But
no,
if you...
Communities are too big.
Yeah, but if you get people into these sections of communities through participation, you can start to bridge that gap. And if there's things happening all over the place, it doesn't matter if nobody in this city knows each other, just as long as the communities and the people within them know each other.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a matter of transitioning to smallest, beautiful type communities. I've got Michael scheduled. I'm working on a date with him to come on my show. I've written some stuff about natural governance. And the ideal structure for me, for the planet, is grassroots communities. We're pack animals, so I believe that we should be all organized in small communities. The grassroots should be the core of any governance, and everyone in that community should understand how it's governed. Now, not every community has to be identical. I mean, we have to start with natural law. And natural law says everyone should have the basics met. They should have food, water, shelter, clothing if they need it, energy, etc. So you create these sustainable small communities or eco-villages. And then after that, you network them, and you can create teams within each of these villages. And I think this is what Ubuntu is trying to achieve. And I also discovered recently through a contact I have in Europe, he's living in an eco-village in Italy, that there's a huge network of people called GEN, Global Eco-Village Network. Have you heard of that?
No, haven't.
No, No, I mean, I was... I've been working on this for the last few years. I have no idea. I mean, there's a huge disconnect between North America and Europe. And there's so many neat things happening in Europe, and I'm sure there's neat things... You're in New Zealand, right?
Allegedly.
Yeah, okay. And there's some... I mean, there really is some cool things happening. I'll send you the link to the people I've recently met, and they're doing some amazing things to try to create sustainable communities all over the planet, because to me, this is the key. I mean, we have to get back to smallest, beautiful communities. And then from then, once we establish these cores of sustainable communities, participatory democracies, or whatever you want to call them, contributionism, you know, there's many labels you can put on them, then we network those together and we create another level of sort of a connecting kind of governance. But the key is to keep the power local and the control local and the growing of food and all the things we need to sustain a community. I think this is the model that's going to work. Well, it's going to solve
it implies
all the kind of problems.
It implies that everybody's in touch with each other. And it's so much easier to turn a blind eye when nobody knows each other. Like, do you remember that that story a long time ago, how a woman was being raped and murdered in an alley, and there were people like leaning out of their windows and people all around seeing, and nobody did anything? Or like that time, I think it was Michael Moore, he did an episode of The Awful Truth, and they had people around the world posing as dead guys. Like, just in the street of a major metropolitan area, just a guy just lies down on the side of the street and pretends to be dead, and they run a clock and see how long it takes somebody to actually care enough to wonder whether or not this guy's actually dead. And it's like, Toronto, Canada, somebody comes up in, like, 60 seconds. And in New York, it took, like, 18 minutes.
Well, I used to live in Ottawa, which is the capital of Canada, and it was rated by, I think it was Reader's Digest, they did a similar type of study, and they sort of tried to rate the average level of compassion amongst the citizenry in these cities. Ottawa scored the lowest of any city on the planet that they did a study on. I mean, it's a super unfriendly city. It's all government people, and they're all locked into their little office, and when they leave, they don't leave their office. It's kind of sad. It's a very rich community because, you know, government employees are paid very well and have great benefits. But, yeah, I mean, there isn't a high degree of compassion in that city.
A massive community where people work for the government, taking things from people and then giving things back to people who don't even go out of their offices, turns out to be one of the least hospitable bunch of people on planet freaking Earth. You don't say.
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, they're very well educated on average. They're extremely arrogant. Their family is their family, maybe their immediate family, and then beyond that, it's. I mean, I'm not saying that everyone is like that. I mean, there's some great people in Ottawa, and there's some great community leaders, and there's community gardens. There's good stuff happening there. But I'm just saying, you know, on the average, that this is what Reader's Digest came to. You know, this was their conclusion. I mean, how good the study was or not. But I know I've I lived there for 35 years. I know what the people are like. And I mean, I said screw working for the government. I could never do that. I mean, it's just dead end jobs. You get paid very well, and you really just twiddle your thumbs all day. And you
certain places you just won't fit in, and you know, like if you're a Klansman, for example, and you like walking around in a white hood, living in a northern state's probably not going to be that good for you.
No, exactly. But anyways, I wanted to share this stuff because I've only had two shows, but I'm meeting the most fascinating people, and a lot of it started with this contact. He's a filmmaker. His name's Raul Alvarez, and I just met him at there was a conference about developing alternative communities, and I submitted my conceptual community called Canada's Gone Organic, and I met him there, and he had a film, and we watched it. It was all about different types of organic agricultural systems, and he did a great job, and now he's over there, and he's going to do another movie, and there's a woman there named Munta Ito. Keep an eye on that. I'm going to have her on my show. Yeah, my show's on Fridays at 6. Okay, well, actually, I'm changing it to Wednesdays. But the following show is Friday at 6 Eastern Standard Time. And then I'm going to be on the same night you're on, Wednesdays, a few hours before you. I'm going to be at 6 o'clock on Wednesdays. After this Friday, I'm switching time slots. So I hope you listen to my show. I'm going to have some of the, I consider to be the top leaders. It's all about activism. It's all about showcasing people that are actually trying to make a difference and having some impact. This Moomsa Ito woman is amazing. Have you heard of a community called Findhorn?
What?
Findhorn. Findhorn.
It's in Northern Scotland. No.
Yeah. It's the most advanced eco community in the world. It's incredible what they're doing there. They're fostering all sorts of positive movements, the rights of nature, all these countries that are passing laws trying to protect nature from, industrial...
That might also be a part of the Agenda 21 protocol, which is to close off all the land and everything to human activity and crowd us into megacities, where, incidentally, communities that we're the kind we're talking about won't be able to thrive anymore.
Well, I mean, I chatted with her for an hour and a half, and that certainly wasn't my conclusion.
Hey, well, hold on. You've added Skype as well as the other thing, Sean. Can you drop Brian's Skype there? Yeah, just a little
better?
Bit of problem with our producer there.
Oh, just back.
You're going to need to mute your Skype there, Brian. or hang it up. I don't know how you're actually on with two calls there. But anyway, we're having Freighter X come on in just a few minutes, so we'll have to finish up and then bring him on, Brian. It's been nice, and best of luck with your show, mate. That sounds great.
Okay, sorry, I'm having a hard time getting Skype off my phone.
Yeah, don't worry.
Is that better?
It has already been done.
Oh, okay, great. No, usually I'm working on my computer, and I use my phone to call you through a Wi-Fi connection, so it's free that way for me, so that's why this Skype came through. So, yeah, no, it's I'm really excited. I'm meeting some fantastic people, and I understand what you're saying about the Agenda 21 stuff, but no, I checked it out with her. No, that's certainly not their understanding, although they do have an affiliation with the UN. But, you know, I'm not one who thinks that the UN is all bad.
Well, that's like saying the police aren't all bad, you know? Police aren't all bad, sure, but they will still assault and kill people and get away with it. And just recently, what's his name? The UN was implicated in a rather large massacre. In point of fact.
Yeah.
And guess what? They got away with it. Okay. Thank you very much for your time, Brian. Sean, if we could bring in Freighter X right now. He appears to be ready.
Okay. You take care, Vinny.
Thanks, Brian. You have a lovely night, son. Okay. Right now... Freighter X, for those of you who don't know, he's a member of nine secret societies, and it appears that there's a secret war going on inside Freemasonry. And what he's done is write an actual book about it, right? Now, this is pretty off the wall, because... a lot of people have said for a long time that Freemasonry is, like, totally corrupt. And it's just like actually Brian was saying before, like, not everybody at the UN is corrupt or whatever. But, again, it's the good apple versus the bad barrel, okay? The bad barrel kind of always wins unless you wind up jumping out of that barrel. You know what I'm saying, don't you? And it appears to me, at least, that the... world has become a little bit more complicated of late. You can't really just, you know, lock everybody down and say this person's bad or this person's good as a result of actually putting them into the conversation. Like in terms of Freemasonry, there's the original aspect of it, which is a brotherhood. There's nothing wrong with having a brotherhood with fellow guys and things of that nature. But the other element here is that there's also a lot of knowledge, okay, occulted knowledge that has been kept from people. And I'm sorry, I'm just doing a little bit of producing in the background here, if you can hear the typing. But it seems to me that this organization is probably the largest secret society on Earth, more or less. And what's happened is it's been infiltrated by dark occultists. There's occultists, and I know many of them, you know, like Mark Passio and so on and so forth, who possess a lot of occult knowledge, but they try to share it with people. Dark occultists, on the other hand, they obtain knowledge for themselves. And that's when the original idea of giving people enlightenment, giving people tools and natural law, goes a little bit awry. Because if you're aware of those tools and you don't share them, you're the one with the power, and they are not. Fredo, welcome to the program. Fredo Riggs, you're on air. Speak up, son, you might be on mute. Okay, that's not working for some reason. It's absolutely terrible. Okay, maybe I'll just sit here and think about the pontification. So Fredo Riggs's website is The Middle Chamber. Now, I think it's middlechamberfx.com or .wordpress.com. We've just had to cancel out on Fredo and try and reconnect him in the meantime. God, this is just awful. Fredo, are you there now? No. Still not working. You've got to be freaking kidding me. Sorry, ladies and gentlemen. Trying to connect you now, bro. But we can't hear you. That's really quite a frustrating one. It really quite is. Fredo, you're not there, are you? Speak up if you can. Hello? Is it not working? There's some dark occulted mysticism going on here. I can just feel it. I don't know what we're going to do, man. Can't really sort that one out. If my producer would mind messaging Fredo and seeing if he has like a phone number or something of that nature that we could connect him on that, you know, if possible, that might work. Shoot, just lost my train of thought. And the only caller that we had into the show is gone as well. You've got to be kidding me. It's really, really nasty. Meandering. Right? This is the problem with live radio, isn't it, folks? Because when you pre-record it, and this is a little bit of advice for other radio show hosts or whatever, this is the very difference between live radio and pre-recorded. Live radio, something goes wrong, you're screwed. You have to roll with the punches. Pre-recorded, on the other hand, something goes wrong, you've got all the time in the world to make your corrections and your editing later on, and there's no need to ever be frustrated or yell or go nuts in those kind of situations. These ones, on the other hand, don't fit into that paradigm. I've got, you know, it's like this rage that kind of builds up, you know. Technology, work, dang you. Because it's like, bro, come on. You've got a billion-dollar corporation there, you know, Skype. What's going on? And they can't manage to make it work. And it's beyond a joke. And you wonder exactly how much of this is the interesting part about being a conspiracy theorist or a truther, you know, is that the first thing that comes to your mind and that you instantly dismiss because you know it's kind of silly is that it's not just a technical glitch. It's actually somebody intentionally, like from the Mossad or the NSA or something like that, has just like singled you out in particular for your show. and then it just goes on like that. And I think maybe what's happening here when people jump to conclusions like that is that you don't really kind of, shall we say, process the situation in and of itself when it's going on. That's where the propensity to jump to relatively irrational conclusions actually comes from, you know, because you know that, you know, technically they really are after you, in a broader sense, they, the ubiquitous they, as they've been so knowingly and lovingly called, truly are after all of us in some way, shape or form. But it doesn't mean that you and yourself are on the radar. It's kind of like smacks of a bit too much self-importance there, don't you think? Like, your radio show is the most important thing going on that the NSA can spend its time on right at this particular momento? Mm-hmm. You have no idea what's going on, do you? Because there's a background scene to things, man. And ultimately, that whole adage that you talk about all the time, how some things are really, really just coincidence and some things really, really are just the fault of stupidity. Sure, it happens like that. Other times, like, for example, I think there's only one time when I was pretty sure that there was some kind of intervention going on. And that's when I was interviewing Tila Tequila. That show was plagued with technical glitches. Okay. She had Skype on her phone, Skype on her computer, a landline, and her cell phone number. Okay. All of these four things would connect and then fail. Connect and then fail. Connect. And then guess what happens? The entire internet company that I'm working for at that exact time goes down and 90,000 people are without internet for like 40 minutes. It was right in the middle of my show. Like, I was busy packing up my computer to run to a friend's house or something like that and jack into his so I could finish the show with Tila Tequila. There were like 8 different things going wrong. It was either she could hear me and I couldn't hear her, or the other way around, or the phone would drop off, or the Skype would drop off, or all of these other different things were going on. It was so suspicious, man. And I'm really kind of like freaked out. And what was interesting is that she's kind of like mainstreamish. Like, I had reporters from newspapers and stuff come around and interview me, and they were like, oh my god, you've interviewed Tila Tequila. Like, they were really impressed because she was like a former Playboy model and everything. I'd never even heard of her, you know. I'd never read Playboy in my life. And it was quite interesting because the things that she was talking about didn't surprise me. All it was the source that they were coming from. For instance, she'll talk about these Hollywood death cults and that kind of thing. We've just found out that Frederick doesn't have a phone and he's on a new Linux system, so he can't get that to work. So it's just not going to happen. But what she was talking about was these scary, nasty Hollywood type things that I already knew about and that had been exposed long before. But because she is who she is, it suddenly hikes up that credibility kind of factor. You know what I'm saying? Like, if somebody's a police officer and they come out against police corruption, you're probably a bit more likely to listen to it with a bit more of an attuned ear. If somebody comes out from Hollywood and the glitz and glamour lifestyle and all of that kind of stuff at the Playboy Mansion and says that people are involved in vampire cults and they're drinking people's blood, literally, like out of a cup, it makes you sit up and go, whoa, that's a little bit rough. That's a little bit strange, don't you think? And people like really kind of lap that up. And so they should. There's so many people who you don't even know, right? So many people. You know, you think about this. How many people have I interviewed on my show? Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds. Somebody asked me once, Vinny, is there anybody you haven't interviewed on your show? Because when you look through the archives, you can search dang near any name of any well-known truther, and there'll be at least one interview, in some cases several with them. And I said, yeah, there are plenty of people that I haven't interviewed. Billions, in fact. Everybody's got a story, don't they? And that's the most important thing to realize about people telling their story, is that they're telling it from their own perspective, in its uniquity, and in its entirety. In so doing, you get a greater perception of the whole puzzle and how it fits together. Like, let's say, for example, workmates. You do a job, perhaps like I used to do, where you do telemarketing, where a lot of the people are like young and basically selfish, right? Selfish and shallow. I think that's probably what I was. And you find out that you only get selfish, shallow opinions in that environment. Isn't that interesting? You're not expanding your horizons. You're not actually getting any deeper insight into the greater complexity of the whole. Isn't that sad? I thought it was sad. So I don't work there no more. And the only people I talk to now are people who've actually got something to say. If somebody's telling me something I've already heard, I start getting bored very, very quickly. And if somebody is like, telling me a very, very strange story, like it's too hard to believe kind of thing, I am more than likely capable of just going, you know what, I am not that keen on believing that. It doesn't make any sense to me, etc., etc., etc. And I've got this like great fear that one day I will become so full of assumption that I'll start being like all the old people that I don't respect anymore, thinking they know everything about everything and not even investigate anything they look into, that they hear about, and instantly dismiss it. You know people like that? It's called being long in the tooth. And it doesn't just happen to you when you get older. It happens to you all the time. There's something wrong here. Something very wrong with society. And we're a part of this. Don't think you're separate from it. I was just thinking about this the other day, about how well interconnected I am with such a vast network of socializing with all these different people. And that even though my network is very eclectic in the fields of research, I tend to keep certain people out of that. And the reason why I don't like people who are like, well, I think you don't even need to explain it really, do you? If somebody's abusive straight off the bat, they don't buy anything you're saying. They just think you're a liar or crazy. And I don't like hanging around with people who tell me that I'm a liar or who tell me that I'm crazy, because I'm not a liar. And because I am crazy, and it makes me feel insecure about, you know, but just because I'm crazy doesn't mean I'm wrong, does it? I mean, the world's crazier than anything else. I've got no bones about it. You know, it's reasonably unfortunate that you don't fit into society. Sure. But the interesting element that really comes into play when you're going on a journey of self-discovery is that you realize you can discover a lot about yourself by listening to somebody else. So many other people have had like portions of their life which are like almost a blow by blow of sections of my life. And they'll learn very interesting and eclectic things that didn't occur to me during that time in my life. And then you wind up learning from them, and you wind up putting some of those ideas into action. Now, my producer, Sean, I've given you a phone number there. Somebody's been trying to call my Skype account. I don't know where people were getting my Skype account for or why they're calling me. I haven't really asked for callers to call in at all. But, in fact, let's change that right about now. Because I tend to take the back chat out of TalkBack, don't I? It's just me ranting. So, if you want to call in, ladies and gentlemen, you can call via Skype to Freedom Screen 2. That's Freedom Screen 2. Or you can call in the phone number 310-421-4053. That's 310-421-4053. All right, so there you go. If you're trying to call in, there's the number to ring. And go for your life, son. If you want to join us in on this little debacle of a radio episode that I haven't managed to put together quite so well. Damn, I'm terrible. There's a wonderful idea, though, and I was just thinking, because the randomness element, okay, it's like spinning the bottle, but on radio. That's the kind of unique element that guests and callers tend to bring in to the show. And we tend to be calling one of our callers right about now. And I dare say I hope they pick up, because it's quite frustrating having that little dial tone coming across the airwaves, isn't it? Oh, wait.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome to the Vinny Eastwood Show.
Hi. My name's Vinny Eastwood.
Yes, you are.
Oh, hey, man. My name is Eric. I'm from the U.S., California.
Yeah.
And it's been really a pleasure to watch your evolution in this truth thing, truth movement, so to speak. You know, I guess I was exposed to you. I don't even remember the first time or how many years ago it was, but man, you've grown so much and just evolved, you know, and man, you're right on, man. And it's just, I'm sitting here driving my truck. I'm a truck driver now. I drive a truck cross country in the U.S. And I heard about your show and your new show on Freedom's Lips. And I used to listen to this station with Tammy Pepperman when she was on it. And I was pretty smitten by her for a while. And she's way too... way over my head, though. Way over my head.
Hey, it's funny because we went to a listener's birthday party the other night, right, on Saturday, and one of the guys I met there was a trucker. And we actually got to talking about this because there was a Facebook thread that earlier on in the day, and somebody said this outrageous comment. You might appreciate this. Truckers don't do anything for society. It's just like, bro, have you ever worn clothes on your back? Have you ever drank anything out of a bottle? It's the lifeblood of the entire thing. And the comment that I had about truckers was that when they choose to, they're capable of becoming some of the most learned individuals. Because of the sheer fact, especially if you're driving long haul, you have many, many hours to kill. And you can load up a CD or a stick, USB stick or something like that, and plug it into the truck stereo system. And you can listen to informative talk radio episode after episode for hours on end and start to learn at a geometric rate.
That's true. I've been doing that myself. That's how I got to listening to you. Just because you started with Alex Jones, and that was, and then from there, Alex Jones, I went to RBN, I listened to Post at RBN, and just little, you know, here and there going, and you get turned on to all this other different stuff.
Well, I think, I started on Alex Jones too, and he's kind of like the gateway drug of the truth movement, don't you think? You know? Like, he got me into it. He got me all fired up, and I was like, yeah, I'm going to go dig on the New World. Like, even, like, developed an Alex Jones voice or whatever, you know. And we're going out there, and then you start to realize that you don't actually need to use somebody else's voice or somebody else's information. And I think it was actually Alex Jones that helped me sort of realize that I wasn't the Alex Jones of New Zealand. He was the Vinnie Eastwood of America.
Yeah. Well, I think he's, Alex Jones, to me, he's a good introduction to, you know, the truth movement, so to speak. But, you know, he's just kind of a stepping stone. I mean, I don't like to call anybody a stepping stone, but I started getting that he's a fear monger, you know, for one thing. And that it's just like a dead end, that fear mongering. It's just like, Dr. Carly said one time on her show, I listen to her a lot. She talks about the vaccines and the being all the shit in the vaccines. Oh, can I say shit on here?
No, you can't. And you just said it twice.
Oh, I can't. I said it twice.
Well, at least we said at least we said can't instead of the other word that sounds kind of like can't.
Yes. Well, okay. So, anyway, and she coined this phrase that, like, describing these fear mongers like Alex Jones, that, you know, be very afraid because there's nothing you can do, you know, and they just fill you all with all this fear. And then the end game is, and there's nothing you can do about it. Well, so it's like a loop.
I don't know. I think it's the direct opposite. I had this, because he said so many times, and it was like, it depends what you're listening out for. If you're looking for something, you're going to find it, the old saying goes. So if you're looking for fear-mongering and you listen to Alex Jones, you'll see it. But I wasn't looking for fear-mongering when I was listening to Alex Jones. I was looking for motivation. I was looking for inspiration. And I was given it. In spades. And it was only once I had that, you know, it's sort of like when you're at the dinner table and you've got a huge meal in front of you, but you feel like you've had enough and you don't want to clean your plate. You want to, you know, exit the dinner table and get on with the rest of your evening. It was kind of like that, sitting there digesting all this information and then realizing I suddenly know enough where I can take the first step. So, I was lucky because I was working, and I got, what was it, $4,000 after tax cash and $11,900 worth of shopping vouchers for a local mall. And so I went out, got myself an iMac and a handy cam and a tripod. And I lived off the remainder of that money until it ran out. And for the whole time, I wasn't working, like, for somebody else or whatever, but I was really, really working hard. I was going out and filming stuff all over the place. And it was primarily Alex Jones and my listening to him that inspired me to do that. However, I realized something earlier on in the game. Once you start doing your own thing, you stop following what other people are doing. Because you're too absorbed in what you're doing to pay attention to everybody else. And I haven't listened to Alex Jones in years. Like, I haven't listened to a full episode or watched a documentary film of his or anything like that. I've never even seen a full episode of InfoWars Nightly News. And it's not like I don't care or I don't think that it's relevant or that I think it's fear-mongering. It's just, I've got stuff to do.
Yeah, I understand.
You know, yeah. But that's not to say sitting around and listening and growing yourself is a bad thing. I mean, that's the first stage. I mean, if you sitting in the truck one day and you're listening to something and you're like, wow, that's really profound, and it kind of grabs you by the throat or something and gives you this kind of like shock up your spine, not out of fear, but this kind of like, yeah, sort of feeling, that sensation, like you've got a fire lit under your ass all of a sudden.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I've gotten that, and I've left trucking. I left a couple jobs, you know, just in protest, and just one more thing about Alex Jones. I don't mean any disrespect to the guy. I'm respecting, I know he's turned a lot of people. He's woken a lot of people up, so to speak, but just listening, eventually I came to a point of listening to him that I was like, I should be dead by now. By all accounts, I should be dead. According to Alex Jones, we should all be dead by like 15 times over already by now. Like the world should have blown up, like, you know, and, you know, this great, but anyways, So what I did, instead of focusing all on all these horrific calamities, what they're doing and focusing on what they're doing, like what these creeps that you're talking about in the media, with the revolving door, the musical chairs and the government and, that bullshit. And, you know, I'm sorry, I said it again. I figure, what's my relationship to this whole system? What's my status? You know, and that got me interested in the capitalized name and the social security number and the name game and finding out about that. And I used to listen to Tammy Pepperman on this show here, and she says that back in 1666, William the Conqueror destroyed all the records, and ever since then we've all the people have lost their estates, and we've all been lost at sea, and we have no standing in courts because we're lost at sea, and our estates have been taken over by the state, and it goes, oh boy, that rabbit hole goes deep. But she's gone the deepest. I'm kind of fascinated by that aspect of, you know, what is my relationship to this entity, this government entity? Is it a corporation? You know, is it United States government incorporated? And what's my relationship to it? And I've heard that the U.S. citizen is actually domiciled in the 10 Mile Square, Washington, D.C., District of Columbia, because that's the U.S. incorporated headquarters, and we're all U.S. citizens, and we're all corporate citizens, and we're domiciled within that 10-mile square. And being domiciled there, we are subject to their 6 million statutes and codes and regulations as U.S. citizens domiciled in the District of Columbia. And I've heard, you know, that it gets... it's pretty fascinating stuff. And
well, the problem is that I have with this is that there's no support network. If you're going to go be a free man on the land, you're on your own, and you will have to face the consequences of being a free man on the land. And that's what freedom actually really is standing on your own and having no help from anybody and doing everything by yourself. And this is why people wind up running into a lot of trouble in that scenario. Like, for example, I came up with a thought a while ago, and this triggered a bit of controversy, but it's nonetheless true. Can you name me one person who's done either the sovereignty, free man, or straw man thing that, one, didn't get arrested, harassed, or tortured by the authorities? Two, still has all of their private property, like their house, their car, and their boat, and what have you? Three, didn't lose their children or their partner in the process? Four, currently has a good life, good work, and a happy family, or five, has no PTSD or mental or social problems. Right? Because what happens is when you're going up against a system that is all-powerful, like the legal system, regardless of what terminology you use, they don't even follow their own rules. And so it's illegal for them to throw you in solitary confinement for a non-criminal charge. But because you don't agree to being the straw man or whatever, they just throw you in there anyway to teach you a lesson. You know, like they did to Dan Clifford. Or they'll take your job out from under you, or they'll steal your children. And the upshot of this is, in order to be free, you have to lose everything. Right? And it's kind of like the quote from Fight Club. You, it's only after you've lost everything that you're free to do anything. But what's problematic, in my opinion, is that, again, I'm going to reiterate this, there's no freaking support out there for these people. Like, I've had a number of people, including Dean Clifford and Kate of Guy. I haven't had Tammy Pepperman on my show yet, though. She's on my Skype contacts. I'll give her a ring after this. But and it seems to me that I can only have a limited effect. I can give perhaps a little bit of light to their plight, but I can't make governments reverse themselves. I can't organize a group of hundreds of people to be outside the police station chanting, "Let them go," until they do. And that's the real problem with it, ultimately, is that it's a movement only of one. And it's kind of like that analogy in the Rise of the Planet of the Apes, where he holds up a single twig and he says, "This is an ape alone," and he snaps it. And then he holds up a bunch of twigs together and he says, "These are apes together." And he tries to break it and he can't. If you're going into this situation, you're going to be traumatized because you're going up against a psychopathic control system. You're going straight for the roots of it and you best be prepared. And it's, I don't know if people are being warned by the promoters of the free man and straw man and sovereignty remedies before they're going into it, or if they all find out that you're going to have your life destroyed regardless of whether or not you're correct in court. No matter how many times you dot your I's or cross your T's, the system is corrupt and it doesn't obey its own laws yet. Now, that said, it makes it an individual choice. It's about personal sacrifice for a greater reason. Are you willing to lay down your life and the lives of your family to permanently and irrevocably damage your mind and your ability to talk to people because you want to be free that much? Because that's what you're up against. Some people do. And they do so willingly, and I say good on them. Because I've been traumatized really badly, and it made me who I am, and I wouldn't have it any other way. But I've had my time in the darkness. I certainly hope it doesn't come again, and I probably won't be launching myself into it willingly.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Yes, it's a harsh reality when you look at it like that, eh? I mean, because for all the legal jargon and all the complications of the situation, it does really come down to that exact simple fact, doesn't it? That you can't be free without taking everything off you. I'm really upset by that. And that's why I have so many of these people on my show, because I want people to know this. I want to give them some support. And if I can't win their case for them, at the very least I can hear what has happened to them. And perhaps it will be cathartic and they'll be able to get some of that stress and that pressure off of them so they can really tell their story with somebody who actually cares what they're going through. That's about the contribution I can make to the free man and straw man movement. And I'm sure other people can make contributions too. And I'm afraid, really afraid, of what might be done to me or my family as a result of supporting these people like this. And I'm not going to seek out to seek legal remedy myself because of that fear. And it's because I admire these people who are capable of doing something which I myself am too cowardly to do, that I give them a platform, that I give them what support I can, you know? So the old saying, nobody can do everything, but everybody can do something. Or at least that's the way I feel about it anyway. Trying to justify it to myself, justify my frickin' existence.
Yeah, well, you've done a lot more than I've ever done. That's for sure.
Never too late to start. Journey of 1,000 miles starts with that first step, brother. And you know that because you step on the gas if you want to go for 1,000 miles, don't you?
Exactly. Yeah.
And ultimately, this is the crux of the issue. If somebody's saying a remedy, and they don't warn you, first of all, that what the consequences of applying that remedy are, then I think that's being a little bit inconsiderate, maybe even a bit dishonest. I'm not, like, bagging anybody here in the free man movement. Far from it. I'm just saying, if you're going to encourage people to get into it, give them their fair warning. Because I was wrapped up in this as well. Earlier on in the day, I was working with a dude on his legal remedy and his like claim of right, birth certificates and all of that stuff with a blood thumbprint impression and the Queen's seals and all of these kind of things. I've seen correspondence from Buckingham Palace that people have shown me in the folders that they have. They're actually really taking this to the high level. But the thing that all of those people have in common is that they're in pain and they're not having as much success as they hoped they would, and that their pain doesn't stop. It only gets worse as it goes on longer. And so I've rationalized that I can do one of two things. I can put myself through that and achieve nothing for anybody except myself and getting myself all up in the antsy with how terrible I've made my own life because of my own actions trying to take on an enemy that can't be beaten right face to face, and have chosen to live a life of living outside the system to a large degree. Same principle of not being a part of the system, but not actually going into the system to prove that I'm doing it. I just do it. I don't need anybody's permission. I don't need any documents to prove that I don't have to get up and go to a slave job in the morning, because I've busted my ass as much as I possibly can over nearly a decade to ensure that good people get their voices heard. And it's only through the kind support of my listening audience that I survive outside of that system and continue to help the people who are still in it, fighting to free the other people who are still connected to the Matrix.
Like you said, you know, this system is old. It's been in place for a long time. And the things that, like, I'll just mention, Dean Clifford, that he was going up against, I think at one point he put a commercial lien on a police station. And man, he was just going up against some of the biggest heavyweights in the country. I mean, you just don't do that. I mean, it comes down to who's got the bigger guns, you know? A bullet, piece of paper, a legal document can't stop a bullet, right?
I mean, unless you've got incidentally, you have about six pounds of legal documents and you've got them strapped to your chest, that actually will stop a bullet. And that's incidentally the same amount of paperwork that you need in order to become a free man on the land.
That's funny. Exactly. I know. You mean like telephone books. And Tammy Peppermint was the same way. I mean, she sued the United States Congress, from what I understand, and won. She sued them. She evidenced them of human trafficking and of genocide. And she sued them. She sued the U.S. Congress and won. But again, she doesn't have an army or the police on her side to go and arrest them. So it just kind of like was ineffectual. That's the way I understood it. And so far, so good. I think she's still like alive and stuff. But again, like you said, it ruins your life. You can't go anywhere. I mean, you have to become like a Ted Kaczynski, go live in a forest in a little cabin and shoot squirrels, I guess, and eat squirrels. I mean,
I like the comforts of life. I like it when I'm hungry that I can just get some food. I like it when I'm thirsty that I can just have a glass of water. I like it if I'm cold, I can turn on a heater. You know? It's like surviving is not that much of a challenge. It's what you do with your life that matters. And if you're going to sacrifice the comforts of life so that you can make a difference, and the result of that difference is you can't participate in society anymore because it's just too difficult, and that you have to go out in the middle of nowhere and do nothing, it kind of defeats the purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Am I wrong? You know, and this is the element that I think is really... really difficult for people to grasp, is that you can agree with people, but at the same time, not implement it in your own life, you know, out of fear. And ultimately, that's what it is. At least for me anyway, because the time that I got arrested, the two times that I got arrested, in fact, were the worst times like of my life. They're very emotionally damaging to me, and I still feel like I'm suffering the effects. And I've developed a kind of a phobia about it, man. Whenever you see a cop car, and I saw this great post on Facebook, and we're coming to the end of the show here. Was it Eric, was it?
Yes, Eric.
Okay.
Well, we're coming Eric, from California.
Well, thanks for calling in, man. But I saw this great Facebook post the other day, and it was about how we don't... you know, in fact, I've totally forgotten it because I was trying to remember your name instead. I just balls that one up, didn't I?
Yeah, well, I mean, we live in a society, the most law-abiding person in society, you look in your rear view and you see a cop car, and you immediately get like this panic feeling, this fear feeling.
And
you can be
the
cleanest, most law-abiding person.
Yeah.
And you look in your rear view, you see a cop, and it's like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. You've been like the most law-abiding person. You're now possibly beaten to death or whatever. And anything can happen.
I remember what it was now. There's something wrong with society when a cop drives past me and I feel paranoid instead of protected. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show. Thank you, Eric, for calling in. And also Brian Porter, you can check out his show on Revolution Radio as well. And as always, ladies and gentlemen, I am your host, Vinny Eastwood, the most technologically advanced activist in New Zealand. Because if you're up against the world's most advanced propaganda machine, don't bring a knife to a gunfight, son. We'll see you again sometime, assuredly.